Pilot TV podcast this week. We are live at the London Podcast Festival. Thanks for coming out. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to this, our very first live show, and a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for all of you to be sort of James-splained television live in the flesh, which is nice for you. You'll also get to see the kind of array of facial expressions that Terry goes through just before she yells at me at the top of her voice. That'd be good too. And you might get to meet one of Boyd's celebrity friends in the flesh. So we'll see. Steady. We're getting ahead of ourselves because on the Pilot TV podcast this week, we will be catching up with Line of Duty's Roshenda Sandal for Netflix's interrogation drama Criminal, donning stupid wigs and heading off to chambers for the Beeb's baby barrister comedy Defending the Guilty, and doing our level best to reduce our degrees of Kevin Bacon by watching his new show, Boston set crime drama City on a Hill. Now, it should come as very little surprise. I'm not doing this here on my own. My loyal co-hosts are waiting in the wings, having given up their Friday nights to be, you know, patronised live on stage, which is again, nice for them. Having done their level best to replace me with a pair of semi-intelligible millennials over the past couple of weeks, I am, thankfully, back. So, first up, a lady whose dulcet tones you will soon be wooed by, in, let's be honest, probably including the words bell and end. She hails from a small mining town in the north of England where TV consists pretty much exclusively of Shane Meadows dramas and reruns of Law and Order SVU. It's Terry White!
Hello,
Terry. You don't need to... It's fine. Distance is good.
Why?
Well, for my own sanity, yes. Distance is good.
That volume
you don't
thing,
need
right?
Directly. It's okay. Fine. You don't need to do it through there. Now, I've done some research. I've found something out. Would you like to know what it is?
Go on.
So, I did some research this week into the origin of the word bellend.
Oh! Is it just a picture of your face?
No, although, and I will digress slightly, which is great in the first few minutes of the podcast, but once Chris Hewitt put a picture of me next to the word cunt in the Oxford English Dictionary in the Empire office, so every time the subs had to look up the word, there was a picture of me going...
Why were the Empire subs looking up the word cunt on a regular basis?
You've read the magazine, right?
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, we're digressing. So, bellend. So, The Oxford English Dictionary describes bellend as thus, bellend, pronounced bellend. Noun, British, vulgar slang. 1, the glands of the penis. 2, an annoying or contemptible man. Example usage, he is a total bellend. Or in your case, fuck me, you are such a bellend. Synonyms, dickhead, cockhead, knobhead, knobend. The earliest citation of this was in the 1961 edition of Eric Partridge's Dictionary of Slang and Unconventional English.
Is anybody else listed, still listening? Fuck me.
Where it is listed with the comparable terms blunt end and red end, which I've never heard, but feel free to make use of that.
Cockwomble.
Thank you. But most interestingly, so it turns out that bell end in French means beautiful place. Or near enough that makes no difference. So really, it's just a sign of the sort of admiration you have for me. So that's.
If you want to take me calling you a bellend every day as a sign of my love, then you should.
I'm going to do that. Joining Terry and myself is the third leg of our wobbly table. This is a man who really is all things to all people. Found an obscure TV show. He's seen it. Read a scathing review. He will find a redeeming feature. Name a well-known celebrity. He will pursue them mercilessly and wear them down until they agree to be his friend. A central character who undoes 7 seasons of character development, does a ridiculous vault fast and sets fire to a city killing every man, woman and child in it. Boyd will defend it to his dying breath. He is a minor TV celebrity in his own right. And let's be honest, he's essentially maintaining the symmetry of this little sort of bald white man sandwich we have here. It's Boyd Hilton.
Thanks. I'm not a fucking stalker.
Yeah, we'll find out about that in a minute. How you feeling, boy? Are you feeling good about tonight?
I'm feeling well, yeah. About 10 minutes into your bell end discussion, I was starting to wane, but now I'm feeling it much more.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not going to lie, it's go downhill from here.
Yeah, a few thousand words into your script, we're doing well, I think.
All right. But before we get on with the show, we do have an additional member of the team this evening. Having spent the past 52 episodes of this show essentially ribbing Boyd relentlessly for being a starfucker, we thought it time to prove that he is in fact the confidant to the stars that we've kind of made him out to be. So joining us on stage tonight is a man who starred in the likes of Being Human, Looking, Him and Her, Quantico. He is also the star of one of 2019's best shows so far, Years and Years, and long-suffering friend of this guy, it's Russell Tovey!
Hello, 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 hello. How you doing?
Russell, welcome to the Pilot TV podcast.
Thank you very much. Honored to be here.
You have had an amazing career doing amazing films, amazing TV shows. You've been in one of the best shows of the year so far. And I think the question that everyone here would demand I ask... What's it like being friends with Boyd Hilton?
It's genius.
Is it?
Yeah.
Really?
He's the loveliest man.
Is he though?
Thanks.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. Well, on that lie, we will move on to what we have been watching. This is where we catch up with how we've been spending our screen time over the past 7 days. So, Terry, what soul-destroying dirge have you been...
So I found this thing called River... Which, Boyd, I'm looking at you.
Oh, yeah.
So did anyone watch River? I think it was 2015.
BBC One's River.
BBC One's River. So, James, you'll have to bear with me because it's technically a procedural.
Right.
But it's about this guy, Inspector Jim River, who is suffering guilt and basically PTSD after his partner gets killed. This isn't a spoiler. It happens immediately. But then this mad thing happens towards the end where you realise she's a fucking ghost.
Spoiler.
It's the first episode. Yeah, she's a ghost, true. And it's the premise of the entire thing. So it's proper trippy. He hallucinates all the way through. It's got this mad disco soundtrack. It's just absolutely bonkers. And I watched 4 episodes the other night in my liking to stay up all night and watch one thing. You would absolutely fucking hate every minute of it.
Excellent.
It's a bit like Truly Madly Deeply crossed with SVU.
That's a bit Sixth Sense though as well, isn't it? The ND's a ghost.
But it's...
Oh my God! What is happening?
Yeah, sorry about that.
So I've been watching that all week.
Good. Anything, you know, fun? Or was that... No?
Oh, I watched Bake Off again.
Oh, Christ.
That went down so well last time.
Yes, I'm sure.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Have you ever watched an episode?
Anyway.
Just watch a fucking episode.
Russell was in Celebrity Bake Off.
Are you really?
Yeah. I was.
What did you make?
My signature dish was a flapjack topped with a brownie, which I think I won that one. And then the next one was, the technical was you had to make puff pastry cream horns, and I put them in the oven the wrong way. So he's meant to have 5 identical, and I had 3 that were like not identical in any way at all. Failed that. And then the last one, which you had to make a meringue world, a meringue memory. So I made this camping scene in Whitstable with me and my dog, but I forgot to put trousers on myself. And it didn't look right.
So Prue was scandalised.
Yeah.
They were like meringue, not a sausage roll.
It was a really, really stressful experience. I'll tell you that. It was 2 days of being wound up by a team. And you don't realise that when you watch the show, everyone seems to get so stressed. You're like, why are they so stressed? But when you're there, you're assigned like a team of people and you like start cooking. They go, right, start cooking. You start doing it. Someone's there going like, what are you doing? What are you doing with that bowl there? You're like, well, I'm going to put the chocolate in that. Are you putting the chocolate in that now? Yeah. Oh, are you sure you want to do that now? Or should I not be doing that now? Because it says you should be doing that now. They're like, well, I don't know. Then they talk to their friend that goes, yeah, just do the chocolate. And you're like, no, I won't do the chocolate then. And then before you know it, you're so stressed. And then the next day I was like, of course. Because then it's just like competent bakers making nice cakes quietly in the kitchen. They have to like wind you up and get the drama. And it was so stressful. And you want to know another story?
Do it.
Yeah.
Right?
James is particularly loving this because he's obsessed with these type of shows. Yeah.
Yeah.
So everyone, it's a 2-day thing, and they say, we'll see you tomorrow, bakers. And then everyone turns up in the same clothes on the second day. And I was always like, why? And obviously, because they want to edit and take bits from other episodes. But they dry clean your clothes, right? Well, they dry clean my clothes and they shrunk them. And the next day, they turned up and I had this top and my belly button was hanging out. And I went, I've shrunk this. They went, oh, okay, you're not going to wear that. I said, no, you can see my belly. I can't wear that. So I think in the history of Bake Off, I'm the only person that's ever worn like a different outfit for the second day.
Wow.
Yeah, the editor hated me.
Historic.
Historic. It was historic. Point.
And who were you with? Was it wasn't it Aisling B? I'm imagining.
No. It was Rylan, Michelle Keegan, and James A. Custer.
Wow. So this sounds a little bit like West Wing. But
yeah,
with
it was,
cakes.
It was like
West Wing with cakes.
Like a walk and bake, is that what
you're saying? You'll be happy.
You make it sound much more exciting. I didn't realise it was quite so much drama.
It was
I might be persuaded to watch this.
Wouldn't it be great if Aaron Sorkin scripted a kind of bake-off?
Oh my God!
Like drama.
It'd be the single greatest thing
ever. It'd be the greatest thing ever. It'd be better than that fucking clip from the newsroom that was on that was going around.
Can we not?
We're going to talk about that later?
Look.
Why can't we talk about that?
One bad scene in the whole show.
Worst scene. Have you seen this?
No.
Someone tweeted it yesterday or the day before.
We're talking about West Wing.
Aaron Sorkin's Newsroom, which was his later show, which is about like a fake CNN.
Yeah.
And it was an incredibly clunky attempt to portray the world of cable news, right, to be topical.
Uh-huh.
And there's this episode, there's this scene which someone posted on the internet yesterday, and tweeted about it, and it is diabolically embarrassing. An example of this, like, masculine. This bloke suddenly sees the air stewards coming out and he's like obsessed with them being heroic, and he decides to change his mind about what he's going to tell them about the terrorist thing that he's witnessed. He's telling them about Osama bin Laden being caught. It's just, have a look, it's one of the worst things you'll ever see.
Because,
and it's Aaron,
because of the stewardesses.
The whole thing is just unbelievably crass and stupid.
It hasn't travelled brilliantly.
No.
I'll grant you that. It's not. But then if you look at the opening scene of the newsroom, it's one of the greatest things ever filmed. So, you know.
Yeah.
It's, you know,
James is obsessed with Aaron Sorkin.
Oh, yeah.
West Wing in particular.
The greatest living playwright.
Yeah.
That's the man you mean.
Apparently. Yeah. I mean, I like him as well,
like,
but
I'm a fan.
He's flawed sometimes.
Yeah. So what Aaron Sorkin shows have you been watching?
I've been catching up with Newsroom via Twitter.
Studio 16.
Studio 16.
Fortnite. You know?
Love
it.
Now, I can't get beyond Succession at the moment, which is another one of your favourites.
Oh, yeah.
Succession is hitting like new peaks. I think in a few years' time, Succession will be regarded as one of the greats, the absolute greats, because it's getting so, so good now. The last episode was it's about the family, the Roy family, headed by Brian Cox, this kind of Rupert Murdoch-like figure, and he's trying to buy, they're these right-wing people, right-wing wealthy media family, they're trying to acquire a kind of lefty liberal kind of New York Times-ish style newspaper group, and the lefty liberals need the money. They need their $25 billion. So they invited them in the last episode for this big weekend session where they confronted the horrible, nasty right-wing fascists, rich people, even richer people, and the liberal lefty people kind of had this big session where they talked to each other and like, got to know each other. Could they trust the right-wing fascists? It was so brilliant. It's so layered and subtle and clever and funny and scary and brilliant, and it's an incredible show.
Oh, I know. Is that the episode where they were all being unspeakable twats?
No. Most of them are unspeakable twats, but it doesn't matter, does it? Who cares?
Do you have conflicted taste?
Yeah.
Speaking of unspeakable twats.
Yeah.
Continue.
Thank you, Terry. Russell, what have you been watching?
You know what? I've been doing a catch-up on lots of things which I've just has passed me by. I've really got into Dr. Foster. I know that's 1994, but it's... I'm obsessed with it. Bertie Carville is, like, amazing. Even though he's a total bastard now, I think he's incredible. Chernobyl, obviously, cleaning that up. That's terrifying me. Absolutely, cold face, absolutely terrifying me. Yeah. I have been watching... What else have I been watching, Boyd?
What have you been watching on... Have you been watching anything on Netflix?
Well, Stranger Things was probably the last thing. You know what I've been... And it's not TV, but Hunger Games, again, is another one I've caught up with.
Oh, wow.
From 1907.
That's for the podcast tomorrow night.
I'm just like... I'm going back in time, catching up on all the shows that passed me by.
No, I know what you mean. So I'm watching... Have you seen Unforgotten? Do you ever watch Unforgotten?
No, not yet.
So good.
I'll watch
so
that in about 15 years.
It's amazing. You're right. Yeah. I mean, I'm a little bit behind, but it's... we were talking about this on the podcast the other week, so I just got to Series 2, and I was like, oh, Series 2 is amazing. Bob was like, you wait till you get to Series 3. I've watched Series 3 and fucking hell.
So Nicola Walker is the ghost.
Yeah.
In Unforgotten.
In River.
Because that puts a whole different spin on
the show. Nicola Walker's in,
she's the ghost.
Love Nicola Walker.
And let me just tell you, after you were banging on about Unforgotten...
You mean speaking intelligently about a show.
I watched the first episode, and I was like,
Have I forgotten?
Yeah.
And you didn't like it?
No.
Oh, my God.
Terry's difficult to please, though.
She is. She is. I mean, I appreciate no one was assaulted in the first... Actually, that's not true. Someone literally dies. But that's not...
There's a skeleton in a basement. Yeah. But you
Which
know
is
that
totally your bag.
I don't know. It's like a period skeleton. Do you know what I mean? I prefer my...
I prefer your corpses fresh.
I prefer contemporary victims.
Yeah,
Who's the river? Who is the detective in with the Clockwork?
It's Stellan Skarsgård.
Stellan Skarsgård. That yeah. He is incredible.
Love
yeah,
Stellan
he did the fact that he even Amazing did a British incredible. BBC. Yeah, he's fantastic.
Stellan
yeah.
Skarsgård, the second hottest Skarsgård.
Yeah.
I don't know where True. You're looking. He is the top. First yeah. hottest.
And Nicola Walker's legend. And I'm going to keep reminding Russ, he was on stage with Nicola Walker
was,
in A View from a Bridge in New
Broadway,
York
yeah.
on Broadway, which I saw.
I
and
love her.
And she, they were brilliant. Yeah. Yeah. She was amazing.
Exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, just saying.
She's a good egg.
What else I watched this week was, and Russell, please don't hate me for this, I just finished Years and Years. It's just taken me a while. It's
that's
taken
right,
me a while.
Because you knew you were going to see me.
Because
tonight.
I knew I was going to see you. Let's be honest. Yes, that's the reason.
I appreciate
no,
that work.
I've been wanting to watch it. But, and people who follow me on Twitter will know, there was... an incident. I was watching an episode of it on a plane. It was the really depressing one where it goes all authoritarian and a bit depressing.
They're all a bit like that.
Yeah, yeah, which one?
And I had some problems at American Customs, and it felt very much like the show had come to life. Yeah, it was a little bit too close to home,
yeah.
And I felt a bit like PTSD by it.
Yeah. But they're the news at 10 went on straight after it, and everyone was like, is this still going on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's, I mean, it is a fucking amazing piece of writing and an amazing piece of acting. And has everyone here seen all of it? Has anyone
not
here
this gentleman
not seen all of it and doesn't want me to spoil it?
Oh my God, right. Wait, you haven't
Enough
seen
people.
It.
Congratulations.
Well, we are going to spoil it.
You've just.
Oh my God.
We have to spoil it.
This whole conversation. Thank
no.
you. So we won't talk about the thing that happens in the fourth episode. But I will say.
We've got to talk about it.
What's so good about this?
You can just kind of like close your ears for a bit.
No,
just talk amongst yourself.
I think it'll add to the experience. I did a thing. I did a thing with Russell T. Davis, a public interview with Russell T. Davis a couple of weeks ago in Edinburgh, and we talked. We spoiled it, and we did this exact same thing. We checked with the audience, and some of them had
then completely.
And then we rode roughshod. Russell T. Davis, the creator of the show, was like, "Fuck it, you know, they should have watched it by now." And
punishment.
Yeah,
you're being punished.
So because it's a big exclusive to get Russell's opinion on that thing.
Yeah. Me
or that Russell? Can we speak? Let's speak in code. Let's see
speaking
how
speak in code.
So. The thing that happened,
yeah.
The poor happened, that we can't really discuss, that's kind of a big thing, isn't it? Now, did the other Russell, was he very upfront about the thing before you did the thing, and what did you think about the thing?
So, the thing about the thing was, basically, so when we were doing the deal, my agent said this deal's taken a long time for them to close the deal, and the casting director, Andy Pryor, run my agent and said, look, Russell wants to have a chat with Russell. Big Russell wants to have a chat with little Russell.
Are you big Russell or little Russell?
I'm big.
Oh, yeah.
And they said, all right, Russell, get on the phone. And he was, hello, darling. I said, how are you? He said, right, so I've written this episode, episode 4, and you get on a boat with Victor, and you're really, like, confident, and you're really arrogant, and you think, right, I'm going to get back. And you get back to the beach, and there's something happens in the boat, and Victor's... dead in the beach. And I was like, oh shit, that's awful. He said, what do you think of that? I said, oh, it's really bad, but in my head I'm thinking, well, I'd probably have to do a eulogy and cry, and then a bit of dynamic between my sisters, something really good acting, that might get me a nomination for something. And then he said, but, I'm fed up with seeing refugees dead on the beach. You get on the boat with Victor, there's something happens in the boat, so at the end of it, something happens.
What could it be?
The thing
can anyone
happens.
Work through that incredibly cryptic clip?
Yes. And he said, what do you think? I said, if I wasn't in it, I think it was an amazing idea. The fact I'm in it, I think it's terrible. You need to change it. And he said, no, best thing I've ever written, that's what it is. 4 episodes and you're out. What do you think? Sorry. And I went, fine. Fuck
he
it,
goes
it.
To live on a farm in Somerset.
Yeah. With all the dogs, the family dogs. Yes. Yeah, so I had to warn my parents again, because it happens a lot. And my mum always like, stop dying in everything. So, again,
well, it must be weird for her, yeah.
Horrible. She's seen me die about 15 times now, so...
Yeah. But it was an incredibly bold move, wasn't it?
Yeah,
the properly
unexpected
thing
yeah,
that's
totally.
Spoiled it for. But maybe you'll forget. Maybe, you know, by the time you leave this room.
But it was like a bodyguard moment. You
yeah.
Know,
yeah.
That, when that sort of happened, everyone was like, what the fuck? That's not meant to happen. So,
has anyone here not seen Bodyguard?
Sorry. You're at the wrong panel. This is like.
Yeah.
Bad choice.
Game of Thrones has got. Should go through the deaths of that.
There's a fucking terrible thing that comes in a red wedding.
We're going to end up with spooks and a head and a fryer again, aren't we? Oh. Sorry for anybody who wasn't
still seeing traumatized
that.
By that. I think the statute of limitations might have expired on that. If not as a banshee, then, you know. Anyway. Time now for this week's news. I will kick this off with a piece of news which is so wildly inappropriate for a podcast, I can't even tell you. A picture came out of the cast together for Wheel of Time. Did anyone see this? Very, very exciting.
One person.
One person.
Yeah. Is it like Wheel of Fortune? Or?
Everyone else is dreading exactly like reel off the character names in fucking Elvish again. But no, that's not going to happen. I will say, it was a lovely shot. But what kind of it hit home for me, and I hadn't realised this because I didn't know everyone was in it, but of the core cast members, it's an incredibly diverse cast. Like, at least half the people, the core characters, are people of colour. And I was like, one of them's Rosamund Pike, who is scientifically the whitest person alive. But other than her...
One of the people of colour is Rosamund Pike. You've got this all wrong.
What can I tell you? She's an incredible actress. But genuinely. So I'm really on board for this, and not just because it's, you know, a 14-volume sprawling fantasy epic by Robert Jordan.
But mainly because of that.
But mainly because it is indeed that, yeah.
I mean, couldn't give less of a fuck. I'm really sorry.
Can you read us some of the character names, though?
Yes, do that.
Read you? You think I need to read them? Do I need to read, you know, Moraine of the Aes Sedai, Wielder of Sidar?
It's a fantasy series.
Egwene Alvear, Nynaeve Almira, Matrim Cawthorn, Randall Thor, a.k.a. The Dragon Reborn, Perrin A. Burra. Do I need to read them? Motherfucker, I read all of these books.
It's a new... It's a fantasy... book. He's read every book of fantasy novels. Every series of novels.
I'm single a lot. What can I tell you?
Yeah.
And like all of Game of Thrones you read before Game of Thrones was on?
Obviously.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And did you think... Were you one of the ones that compares it to when it's on TV?
Oh, yes. I'm that tedious twat, as Boyd will be. Cool. Very prepared to tell you.
Are you like a Terry Pratchett fan? And
I do love Terry Pratchett. Very good. Love
I know you are. Yeah.
Saturday night, basement level of Forbidden Planet. These are my people.
Yeah. What's that game you play on the internet with those other men? Why is it called?
I believe you're referring to World of Warcraft. In my defense, I have not played that for quite some time due to a small addiction problem. But I've stopped it and I'm in recovery and I have not raided in a while.
Isn't there a
night elf rogue called Silana?
Anyway,
there's probably other news.
There's actual Game of Thrones news, isn't there?
Yes, there is. That's right. They've announced there's a second prequel in development based on Fire and Blood, which was the prequel sort of Targaryen book that George released when he should have been writing the next
George,
fucking novel.
Like you know him.
What's the first one's The Children of the Forest, isn't it? The story about
So he's doing the first one, which they call, they call it Long Night, Children of the Forest, whatever. Does it got an official title yet?
Was that a book before though as well?
No, so that's an original one. This is Jane Goldman's
one. Yeah, Jane Goldman's
going to set like 1,000 years before. But this is also, so this will start with Aegon Targaryen, Aegon the Conqueror's conquest of the Seven Kingdoms when he comes over from Old Valyria on his dragon, Balerion the Black Dread. It's going to be good. It might include the Blackfyre Rebellion. That'd be exciting.
Wow.
Big time.
But George, as you called him, as if you know him, as if George, he's your best mate, he's writing it, isn't he? That is quite interesting.
He is, yeah.
But he's not writing the other one, is he?
No, he's
right.
Not. No,
and there's going to be five...
Spin-offs,
prequels,
when's
whatever.
The first one coming out?
That's a good question.
I think it'll be next summer because they've finished filming the first
they
section.
They have, they've done it.
They've finished filming the first section, I think.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be in about a year's time. I mean, that's my total guess.
Do you get the buzz like from these shows being on the inside? Or?
Well, I bumped into Jane Goldman thing, and she said it's going to be fucking good.
Tell us, Boyd, what happened? How is Jane?
She seemed confident it was going to be good. Like, great.
Really?
Yeah. She was.
What, have you ever known her not to be confident?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, she's not like a boastful, yeah. I think she was quite
nice.
Yeah. But what we should say, you must have been offered a role in Game of Thrones.
Never.
Never?
How come?
Never. What? That's ridiculous.
Really ridiculous. I look like a... Never.
Fucking hell.
I know. Annoying,
that
right?
That is outrageous.
Really outrageous. Yeah.
Okay.
I missed that. I missed Harry Potter. I did Doctor Who. That felt
you did
like
do Doctor
Barry
Who.
Potter
yeah.
Wheel of Time. I'm telling you, shooting in Prague now.
Wheel of Fortune with my family.
And Russell T. Davies wanted you to be Doctor Who at one point, didn't he?
He did. Yeah.
How close did that happen?
Matt Smith got it.
Oh, right. Okay.
But I went and read for it and talked to them all, and I think I was quite close. But Yeah. They told me they were casting older, that's why I didn't get it, and then Matt got it. He's, I think he's 4 years younger than me. That was a lie. Just things you say to actors. Mm.
Terry, how did you feel about the Crown casting?
I had feelings, so this is Gillian Anderson yeah. as Margaret Thatcher. Yeah.
It's very confusing in for me on so many levels.
Why would it be confusing, James?
I'm just saying, like, in terms of confused sexuality, there are so many problems with this whole situation. Yeah, yeah, yeah. On the one hand, it's Maggie. On the other hand, it's Scully. And it's just, like, really...
But you used to be a Tory, so a latent part of you must kind of be quite excited by this.
That was such a long time ago. I mean, Christ, you become despotic once for a brief period. You never hear the end of it. I never thought of that, because she's a gay icon playing Thatcher.
Yeah, and actually, what caused some consternation. Thank you.
I think you'll find.
Was the and I've got it here, so I don't misquote. Was the quote that Gillian Anderson put out? She said she was excited, blah blah blah. And she said, you know, the opportunity to portray such a complicated and controversial woman. She was undoubtedly formidable, but I am relishing exploring beneath the surface. And dare I say, which usually means don't say what you're about to say, falling in love with the icon who, whether lived or loved or despised, defined an era. The internet did not enjoy the falling in love with the icon part of that quote. And people were sharing Thatcher's record on, you know, pits and kids and, you know.
Do you think Meryl fell in love with her?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can tell. But I get why people are confused. But also, you know, she's a, what's that word? Actor.
Oh, yes. So you're, like, it's pretend.
Yeah.
Ah, yeah, okay.
So I think she should be free to do what she wants.
Fair enough. Good.
But that's season four of The Crown that she's going to be in, yeah. I've watched some of season three.
And?
Incredible. Yeah.
Are you breaking an embargo?
Maybe.
I think you just actually broke an embargo.
Helena Bonham Carter as Princess Margaret. Fucking hell. Yeah.
Diana comes into this one, right?
And Charles is played by Josh O'Connor.
O'Connor, who's amazing.
He's great. Love.
Yeah, yeah. Were you offered a role in The Crown?
No. No, not yet.
Not yet.
Still confident. Will
do you think they'll go up to date for like this period?
I do. Who would I play there? What would I do?
John Major.
Ooh, what?
Wow. That's terrible.
The heart. That's a hot call.
No. Yeah.
That is harsh.
He's an actor. How about maybe make believe?
David Cameron. How about David Cameron?
Oh God, is this meant to be getting better, Boyd?
I'm going to fall in love with the icon. David Cameron.
Oh. He's got a lot of buzz around him right now.
He's very buzzing.
Hawkeye, do you see the Hayley Steinfeld?
Yes.
Yes, might be playing Kate Bishop in Hawkeye. Kate Bishop, who becomes the next Hawkeye after the existing Hawkeye stops being Hawkeye and becomes something else. Yes, yep. Happy? Are we there for this?
Yeah.
Or are you just broadly indifferent?
Oh, I love Hayley Steinfeld, yeah.
Good.
She's great. Yeah.
This has been an excellent talk.
Do you know about all these Marvel shows they're doing on Disney Plus, on the new Disney streaming service?
Oh, right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
I
do.
Have they approached you too?
No. I did CW. I was in The Flash.
Yes,
Legends of Tomorrow.
Arrowverse you've been part of.
I was in the Arrowverse. Yeah, I did a crossover. Crisis on Earth X.
The Infinite Earths was the last one, wasn't it? Oh, yeah, I see.
I was in Crisis on Earth X and I played Ray Terrell, a.k.a. The Ray, who was gay.
And it's gay.
Was the rhyme intention. Gay, right. Yeah, and that was fun. That was interesting.
Because they're massive, aren't they?
Yeah.
Like absolutely huge.
Yeah, and I turned up on the first day and everybody is in full, because it's crossover, you see every show, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, Green Arrow.
Is Legends of Tomorrow the one with the gorilla? Am I making that up?
No.
There's a time-travelling gorilla in one of them.
That's the thing with Noel Fielding, isn't it? Is there? Yeah, maybe there is.
I didn't see a gorilla in this.
He wasn't there.
He wasn't there that day. But all the other superheroes were there, and we all sort of turned up on set and just sort of squeaking around. And you saw them all. It was crazy, and I was like the most buzzy. Like, isn't this amazing? Like, yeah, sure, it's fine.
It's fine until you want to have a poo, and then it's a fucking nightmare.
Yeah. So, but no, that was fun.
Was there any talk of doing a series with your character?
Yeah.
Okay. And it's still maybe.
I don't know.
Oh,
maybe.
Okay. Yeah.
What are you breaking embargoes?
Yeah, I guess. Ruining everything.
Yeah, yeah. Mandalorian's getting a second season. You see this?
Oh my God!
Very exciting.
Haven't been out yet.
No.
Very exciting. Doesn't matter. It's Disney Plus. They don't wait for viewers. So Favreau said he's going to direct. He didn't get to direct any in season one, but he's going to direct some in season
two. But Pedro Pascal's still doing the second one.
Yep.
Does he ever take his helmet off in it?
I believe so. Right. I saw about 10, 15 minutes of this at Celebration earlier this year, and he was helmet on for all of that.
Because he was sharing the promo pictures on his Instagram, and I was like, that could be anyone.
Yeah, it really could be anyone. Like, why hire this man who looks like that and stick a fucking helmet on? It's ridiculous. But no, I'm very much excited for it.
So this Disney thing, that's a brand new content thing, like Apple TV thing. Yeah. They're building loads of content.
But we don't know when Disney Plus is coming. So they haven't. It's coming this year.
In the US,
you'll get
next
that on
year.
Apple TV. Yeah.
And
next
here,
year,
it'll be at some point, we think, before the end of time.
But it'd be like Apple TV. Yeah. It'd come up as an icon on there.
Yeah.
Right.
But it'll cost more because, which segues nicely into this, Apple TV announced their rollout plan for this, and it is day and date UK and US, and it is dollar for pounds the same price. Well, so it's $4.99 a month, November 1st, and it will have no ads as well, which is nice. Not surprising, but nice.
And when you buy a certain Apple product, don't you get a free subscription?
Yeah, if you buy any new Apple product.
Any new Apple product gets you a year of Apple TV Plus.
Well, day and date makes so much sense. Yeah. I don't understand.
Well, my understanding of this, and by understanding, I mean I'm basically making this up. But my understanding of this is they have licensing syndication deals. So some of the stuff that they... The Disney. So some of the stuff...
Disney.
Again, can't emphasize enough, making this up. I think they've sold it off to various people and they need to wait for stuff to elapse before they can kind of get their back catalogue back in the UK.
But that doesn't mean you couldn't launch with loads of new amazing stuff in a partial back catalogue and add to that back catalogue afterwards.
That's a good point. You should call Bob Iger right now. And
I will. Don't you worry.
But what else did we see? We saw, speaking of stuff that's streaming, so Apple TV Plus, it's like there's loads of good shows on it. There's nothing on it that looks essential. Although there was a trailer for Jason Momoa's Sea.
Well, not that one. No.
Yeah.
I mean, did anyone see this? So
yes.
It's Jason Momoa. So it takes place in the future. Everyone is blind until they have two babies who can see. And it's like a superpower because they can see and everyone else in the world is blind.
Yeah, but there's a show with Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon and Steve Carell.
But you're missing the point that this is an episode called Sea about blind people. It's created by the guy who made Peaky Blinders. Am I the only one who finds that entertaining?
Yeah, that's quite exciting. But The Morning Show, which is a comedy about breakfast television in America with Reese Witherspoon and Jennifer Aniston and Steve Carell. I mean, that's pretty exciting.
Junior. What's that called, Boyd?
The Morning Show, I think, isn't it? Yeah, The Morning
and
Show.
And that's on Apple TV.
That's going to be on Apple TV.
November when it's...
Well, this is the thing. So they've announced that it's going to launch on November 1st,
$4.99,
but they haven't told us which shows are going to be available from the beginning. So I think they're going to kind of keep that quite mysterious.
Jesus.
Because Apple likes... I know. Yeah. Bastards. Typical Apple. Typical fucking Apple.
Have you seen there's been some Stand casting for The Stand?
Oh, yeah.
New Stephen King.
Stephen
so Whoopi Goldberg, who we thought was going to be playing Mother Abigail, has been confirmed for that. A bunch of other people, but most excitingly, the first most attractive Skarsgård, Alexander, is going to be Randall Flagg, the big bad. That's that I'm pretty excited about. I loved the really shit miniseries from the 90s.
Yeah.
So I'm really, really excited to see this.
Did you watch any Stephen King miniseries when you were?
You must have done.
A whipper?
I did. No, like what? Like
none
what?
Of them. Well, there was Tommy Knocker's Needful Things.
Was that a miniseries?
Yeah, that was a miniseries.
Yeah.
Before the movie.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
No, I didn't see
back
it.
Back in the day. Yeah. It wasn't very good.
All right.
What do you mean it wasn't very good? It was brilliant.
It wasn't though.
But it was terrifying.
It was scary. I mean, scarier than It Chapter 2, that's for sure.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm scarier than It Chapter 2.
My friend tells a story that when he was a kid, him and his sister, their nan was looking after him, and she went to the video store to get him something while she was cooking, and she got him Child's Play, thinking it was for kids.
This is already a good story.
Put it on, and they were like 6 and 7, put Child's Play on, closed the door, went in the kitchen, did the cooking, came back. The kid with Chucky, the kids are like traumatized for the rest of their lives. So she thought really innocent. Oh, Child's Play, that'd be nice.
Are you a horror fan generally as a genre?
No. I mean, I watch it. I'm not like one of them people that's like, let's get fucking scared. Let's do this. Let's fuck ourselves up. No.
Let's fuck ourselves up.
No, but I appreciate it.
No, good.
As an art form, yeah.
Excellent.
You? Are you a big horror fan?
I wouldn't say I'm a big horror fan, because I'm a massive... they freak me out, let's be honest with you. I'm not good with horror.
That's what they're designed for.
Well, yeah, so I guess they're working. But I'm very excited about... I really like The Haunting of Hill House, and so Haunting of Bly Manor I'm very excited about.
Was that a book?
That was a British show, yeah. Haunting of House, which is on Netflix. Yeah. That was The Haunting before, and that is one of the best. We voted it best TV show
of
last year.
Yeah, we did.
Yes, it was that good.
Wow,
Russell.
Okay, cool, great.
Yeah, we like
that. And a lot of the cast are in the next one, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Yeah. Yes, they are. No, that's going to be a good one. Very, very
Oliver Jackson Cohen?
Yeah, love.
Great man. Yeah.
Good.
Did you see the trailer for this thing, Modern Love? Do you know about this thing?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
This is, so Modern Love is a new Amazon Prime series. Yeah. Anthology, I would say compendium. That's a different thing. It's an anthology, different story, but they're based on the Modern Love column in New York Times.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah, which is this legendary column about true stories of relationships, how they met, isn't it? It's kind of the people involved are incredible. So I'm going to list them now. Sharon Horgan is directing an episode that Tina Fey is in.
Heaven.
Anne Hathaway, Dev Patel, Catherine Keener, Andrew Scott is in an episode.
Yes.
It's fucking and John Carney, who is Sing Street and all that, he's kind of the showrunner.
Wow.
And they've kind of let it go under the radar a bit because it arrives like in October, end of October on Amazon Prime, and it looks really, really exciting. The trailer's out and it's good.
Does Amazon really push shows though?
A weird way. You're right. Yeah, they're not like Netflix.
Didn't they just drop them and go
a bit like that?
See what happens.
Yeah, it is a bit like
but
that.
But then Netflix do that too, don't they? With like
with
some
things,
just
materialize,
and we're like, Boyd, why didn't review this? You're like, I didn't fucking know it existed until 5 minutes ago.
It's a bit like that. Yeah. In fact, there's one of those this week. It's, you know this thing called the IA Land. Have you heard
of it? Yes, yes. Someone asked
Neil LaBute.
Have you seen
it? Neil LaBute, the playwright.
Yes.
What is it?
This is a thing. It's like Lost. It's like a group of people arrive on an island.
I'm the voice of the people.
Yeah, you are. I mean, I love Neil LaBute as well, but he has gone a bit wrong, hasn't he, recently? Let's face it, with his films and stuff.
Yeah.
And he's gone a bit wrong with this, to be honest.
God.
This is like a big epic 10-part sci-fi thing set on an island. People arriving on an island, they don't know why they're there, etc., etc. And it's got a terrible title, The I Land, as in I Land.
Got it.
And I've just watched some of it, and it's pretty immediately, quite shockingly bad.
Yeah.
And that went totally... And they didn't really pre-announce that at all.
I wonder why.
Like, that's going to say.
Yeah, and it's just kind of arrived. Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, so that's our hot tip for whatnot.
Yeah.
Which leads us quite nicely onto this week's reviews. First up, this week, we have Netflix's Criminal. This is created by veteran director Jim Field Smith and Killing Eve writer George Kay. This is a slightly odd one, so it's a kind of procedural that kind of pits police detectives against criminals in an interrogation room. So it's 12 episodes, 12 separate stories spanning 4 countries. So it's UK, Spain, France, and Germany. It stars Roshenda Sandal, Nicholas Pinnock, Lee Ingleby's in it. They're among the detectives. And then the kind of the perps. There's some phenomenal work from Hayley Atwell is in episode 2, David Tennant in episode 1. And Terry, would you care to interrogate this one for us?
I mean, you just did most of it, but sure. So as James says, 12 stories, 4 different countries. It's a really, really interesting setup because everything about it immediately says kind of typical police procedural, which means I was in from the get-go. But the actual setup is really interesting. They only have 3 sets. So it's the interview room in which they're interrogating somebody, the hidden room, which is essentially behind the two-way mirror, and then the corridor, which connects the two. So it's this really intense, claustrophobic sense. It was almost like a play in places.
It's an actor's like job.
Yeah, it's insane. And but it's actually still really interesting visually, and actually with the sound as well. So they do amazing things with mirrors and reflections and shadows and like kind of playing on duplicity and truth and deception and all of this. Done with a really light touch, I have to say, because it could have been really heavy-handed. Even the way they use sound, so the way that people breathe in certain situations when they're being interrogated, the use of silence, the beeping of the interview machine. I mean, it's so beautifully choreographed, the sound in places. I thought it was amazing. As you said, the first episode is David Tennant, who plays a doctor whose teenage stepdaughter has been murdered. The 10th Doctor is the only doctor that matters to me, and David Tennant is incredible, apart from you, almost. He is amazing in this. And as you say, it's that cat and mouse game between the detectives and between him. So the investigator is played by Boyd.
It's not Boyd. He's not
Boyd.
Catherine Kelly.
No.
Lee Ingleby.
No. Yes. Richard,
yeah.
Yes.
It's Nicholas Pinnock and Lee Ingleby in that.
Nicholas Pinnock and Lee Ingleby.
I didn't ask you. I asked Boyd, and he was right. So, and he's amazing. And Catherine Kelly, who is obviously incredible, kind of plays the boss, Natalie. And you mentioned Rishenda Sandal, who's obviously Line of Duty and incredible. Amazing. Their dynamic is really interesting. And what I love is because you don't leave these sets and the confines of what they're doing with the suspect, and it runs basically the length of interrogation, is their dynamics and their personal relationships and actually their personal lives come out in little kind of almost vignettes within the scenes. But you never leave the room, which I just think is such a fascinating way to do character development. Mm. Yes.
Yeah. And are you supposed to think that David Tennant's character is guilty then of?
Well,
yeah, you don't know.
So you don't know.
He's a suspect. Yeah.
Yeah, and you follow follow the interrogation in essentially kind of real time.
And you get an answer at the end.
You might get an answer.
just say how fucking audacious this is. For the first 18 minutes of the first episode, David Tennant says absolutely nothing except no comment. He just says no comment,
which is,
no comment,
by the way,
no comment.
Which is incredibly realistic. Do you ever watch 24 Hours in Police Custody?
Fuck me,
on Channel 4? Right. So if you watch that...
Amazing.
Yeah, which is brilliant. Right. And now James won't know what that is because it's a mainstream programme on Channel 4.
Because it's reality.
But it's a brilliant documentary series where they literally show interrogations. And 9 times out of 10, they're advised to say no comment.
Yeah.
So it's completely... So I thought that was a brilliant device in the first one to have him saying that, because that's exactly what would happen. Your lawyer would advise you to say no comment. And then it's all about, can they wear him down to... can they somehow entice him to stop saying no fucking comment? Which, spoiler alert, they kind of do. But it is, as you say, it's a real, it is a real actor showcase because you've got the regular cast of the detectives, and then it's like a guest starring role for actors, like Hayley Atwell's episode 2, and it's and they get to do these incredible... Are they or aren't they criminals? Are they or aren't they guilty or innocent? It's a really clever setup, isn't it?
It is, and the whole thing, for within this genre, I think to feel exciting and innovative and new and fresh is really fucking difficult, right? And I got to the end and was like, this is incredible. I really hope people watch it and don't kind of think it's quite a simple idea, because it isn't. But there is a simplicity in the storytelling and actually in the craft and the way this is shot that I just think is so effective and so brilliant.
Yeah. And weirdly, so the really interesting, another incredible interesting is that there are all these international versions. So there's three UK episodes with that cast.
Yeah.
Then there's Spanish, German episodes and French episodes, which are all filmed in the same on that set. Right?
Right.
And they all have their own stories, and they're all created by or directed and written by local talent, famous local and starring local talent. But they all use the same set.
But do we get that as part of our work?
Yeah, you'll get them all.
But so all, is it subtitled then, the others?
Yeah, they're all subtitled.
Wow.
Yeah. And when I spoke to Rishenda Sandal for the magazine, for Pilot TV magazine, she said that there's talk of like kind of mixing them together at some point, and you know, kind of testing the boundaries of how that what that means. You know, there's all these different international cops talking to villains, and yet they could mix them together. It's such a kind of interest. It's really using Netflix because obviously Netflix is going out to 150 countries, and all of them could do their own version of this thing. Which is really clever, I think. And it's all directed and created by Jim Field Smith, who, interestingly, directed the second... So have I ruined
spoiler.
That name? Sorry. But he's done a brilliant job, because he did The Wrong Mans with James Corden.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's a really clever TV director.
When is it out, Boyd? When's it out?
It's out next Friday.
It is. Oh Friday, September the 20th, on Netflix.
On Netflix?
Yeah. I will say, though, I didn't expect to like this at all, because it's kind of a procedural. But it isn't. Yeah. It isn't. Like, there's, like, I like the fact that there you see bits of their personal lives in between the interrogations, and the pieces sort of fit together. Mm. So there is a kind of a slight ongoing narrative in there. I do also think, like, it's such a genius idea to sort of take the single best thing of kind of police dramas and just make the whole thing that. You know, like the best thing in Cracker was when Robbie Coltrane would get them in the room and just grind them into an intellectual pulp. And that's essentially what this is, and it's amazing. I mean, it's no Ted Hastings in the end of Line of Duty season 5, but it is very, very good. And just to Terry's point on the sound is nuts. Like, when you go into the viewing room, like, the dialogue comes out of the centre speaker and goes into the rear surround speakers. I'm being a twat with a surround sound system, but just bear with me. So, but it's really effective. You feel like you're in the observation room hearing it through the speakers.
What happens if you watch it on your laptop?
Well, then you wouldn't notice.
Yeah.
But the effort went in, and that's good.
But that sense of claustrophobia is created by that. And it's all of it together, right? But you're right, actually. That switch of sound when you move from one room to the other and then back into the corridor... back into the interrogation room is like, it's incredible. Yeah. It does so much of the heavy lifting for you as a viewer.
And it's great that they use that device that they can only hold him for a certain amount of time, and time is ticking down. There's one point where it's like, you've got 3 minutes until home time. It's 3 minutes left, and they've got 3 minutes to crack him. And it's very good.
And it's like the main interrogation room is like the stage, and then there's like the where they're watching them through the two-way mirrors. Yeah. Is like the wings of the, compared to a play setup where you're watching actors acting, and there's people surrounding them, watching them, sitting watching how they're doing it.
Yeah, good shit. Netflix on Friday. Next this week we have Defending the Guilty. Also, thank you, Boyd, as luck would have it, directed by Jim Field-Smith. This is a half-hour comedy on BBC Two in which a sort of callow young barrister played by Will Sharp is feeling his way through this profession and coming to terms with the fact that his job is basically now defending criminals. This show features, in no particular order, a slam poet teenage robber, a joke about Hufflepuffs, the phrase lanky poison twat, and gets a surprising amount of mileage out of the fact that a certain police acronym rhymes with jizz. Boyd Minster, guilty
yes.
or innocent?
Mostly innocent. I don't know whether it's good or bad. Innocent, guilty, yeah. First of all, the cast is great. So you've got Will Sharp, who you may recognise. Was it called Daisies, that thing he did? And he did a Channel 4, his own kind of comedy, very interesting, arty comedy that was on Channel 4. I may have got the title wrong. Anyway, Will Sharp is a very talented young man, as I like to say. Yeah, he's great. Olivia Colman was in it, in fact. And, of course. And he's a really likeable presence. And he is the young, kind of naive, innocent, wannabe barrister who's being trained by Catherine Parkinson, who I also love from IT Crowd, etc. So that's the main kind of, but the main plus for me is those two are great together, and they've got a brilliant chemistry, and she's kind of patronising him and kind of telling him to go get her muffins and her coffee and her latte, and he's like the dog's body. Yeah. And there's a competitive thing going on with him and his fellow young would-be trainee barristers. And I think, and it kind of comes across as quite authentic, and I think it's quite, and Jim Field-Smith, again, as we've said, does a brilliant job at filming it, because even though it's a sitcom, you know, it's a half-hour sitcom about the world of the law and barristers, and it's based on the guy who co-created Alex McBride. He wrote a non-fiction book which is about his experiences in this world of the law, right. And everything. Kieran Quirk co-wrote it with him, so it feels authentic and real. And Jim Field-Smith does a brilliant job. It looks very nice and everything. For, you know, it's a half-hour.
Is it funny?
Now, here's the thing.
You hit the nail on it.
It's not that funny. It's got a kind of, it's got a gentle tone to
it.
Well, it's got a gentle pace. And it's not like...
That's what you want in a comedy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. In a half-hour comedy,
right? Wanted a nice, gentle pace.
Right. Yeah. But if you think of, I don't know, recent... You know, I think we're going through a brilliant period of comedy right now. I said this last week.
Not here, we're not.
You
know, like what?
Well, This Way Out, Ashton B series. Yes. You know, Game Face.
Yes.
Brilliant on Channel 4.
Yeah, yeah, amazing, like, female talent.
Yeah, right, exactly. Exactly. Yeah,
obviously, Fleabag,
completely. Totally. Surface, yeah. I Love Staff Let's Flats on Channel 4, which is really funny.
Yes.
Jamie Dimitriou. All of those shows, even Staff Let's Flats, which is very broad, kind of much more broad than those other ones, are very fast-moving, pacey, punchy. This isn't fast-moving, pacey and punchy, it has to be said. But I don't even know if it's trying to be. I think it's trying to be a kind of almost, you know, we'll show you this world and let you kind of bathe in it and you know, experience it rather than... But when you compare it to those shows, it doesn't feel essential, I would say that.
I mean, it does contain the line spoken by a barrister, women want to get bare and jiggy with the horsehair wiggy. So, that gives you an idea
of
the level of humour.
When you say it, it's really funny.
Thank you. Yeah.
It's your gentle pose.
Yeah.
I'm astonished they didn't ask me to be in it.
Isn't that one of the problems with it? Because it's a bit like being hit over the head with kind of the same kind of joke over and over again. There was what I laughed at one line, which was, I'm going to rain shit on you like the BFG after a Vindaloo. I found that funny.
I like that one.
I mean, first of all, the BFG only eats snozcumbers, so that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
But that's kind of, it's of that ilk, and one kind of drops every few minutes. I thought it did something interesting with classism and sexism within that world, that competition you're talking about. They had
hot
a board,
robot.
Hot Robot, yeah. Angry Chav. I mean, yeah. I DJ took that stupid. One personally, but it was, and it kind of, and it starts to unpick that stuff, and it's quite interesting. You know, Catherine Parkinson's amazing.
She is. Very good.
He has to call her mummy, yeah. which is super weird. but I, you see, boy, what you're saying about a gentler pace, I don't mind a gentler pace, but I didn't feel like there was anything to bathe in. I didn't feel like it was deliberate almost. It was just not funny, and that I found that really, and I found that really difficult. And it had a certain charm at moments.
Yeah. Charm—that's a good word. Yeah, it's charming. Well, yeah,
there's moments of charm, but fuck me, it was a long half hour.
Yeah, there was a bit where she tells him to get a Danish or something, a pastry for her. That's his task for the moment, and that took a long time.
It did.
Oh my god!
I really felt like I'd actually been to Wenzel's and got the Danish.
Yeah, it's rare that I see a scene on screen. I think they really should just have cut that, you know, and it would could have been hot, and they didn't, and it was a bit weird. Yeah,
events occur in real time.
Yeah. It was odd.
Yeah, so on that recommendation, that airs on BBC Two on Tuesday, September the 17th at 10 p.m.
We should say it was a pilot, right? We should.
Oh, yeah,
that, should say that.
That was the pilot episode of the show, which is already. Yeah. But then there's a six-part
which
series.
Aired last year.
Which aired last year. Yeah. So some of you may have seen it, and they've commissioned a full season, but the pilot is the first episode of the
Indeed.
New season.
Indeed. Yeah. Yes. Also out this week, we have City on a Hill. This actually also aired a while back. This aired in the US back in June, and this is based on an original idea by Chuck McLean and Ben Affleck. So like the Affleck movie, The Town, not The Crown, he did not direct... I can't tell you, he did not direct The Crown. That would be a very different type of show. The Town, so it's based on armed robbers in Charleston, Boston. But this is set back in the early 90s, and it stars Aldis Hodge as this kind of young, up-and-coming DA who wants to clean up the city, and Kevin Bacon as a dodgy FBI agent who really doesn't want him to. Now, this has already been picked up for a second season, but Terry, does it deserve one?
Look, so it's stellar in many respects, produced by Matt Damon and Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
Original idea by Ben Affleck and Charlie McLean. There's, you know, it has prestige, it has heritage. It is the most Boston thing you've ever seen. Like, from the first scene, they're going, we're from Boston. I mean, what's that? It's like, parked the car in the Harvard Yard.
That's good, yeah.
Boston. Yeah,
that's extraordinary.
But at one point, I thought they were actually going to start doing that. They're bag the guy with the hammer, Dad. But it's the most Boston.
Do it again.
I thought it'd be better the second time.
This is the new Who the Hell Is That?
Who the hell? Where's Chris Hewitt? Who the hell is that? Texas! Oh no, we'll stop.
Anyway, come back to the light. Come back.
It's going off the rails. Right. It's, in many respects, it feels like a love letter from Ben Affleck, especially to a different time. It's a time of slightly rough and ready cops. It's a time when you just got shit done, whether you were kind of corrupt or not. Kevin Bacon is kind of, he plays an FBI agent. He is your very archetypal corrupt cop. He, like, at one point he thinks he's got herpes from a hooker, which, you know, is just like apparently an everyday occurrence. His missus is totally she gets kind of half a scene. She's very downtrodden. His mother-in-law's always like giving him shit. And so I think the part of the problem with it for me was everybody felt very typecast, and everybody fit the women in it particularly, I have to say. There's lots of wives. They're all suffering. They've all been suffering for a long time. But what I will say is Aldis Hodge, you mentioned, who plays this new African-American ADA who's coming into the city. He has kind of this purity and this really clear moral code that he's trying to see through. He has this sense of justice. And it's there's a really interesting tension between him and the local cops and how that plays out. And actually, you start to see the beginnings of something in the first episode with him and Kevin Bacon, who the path is definitely going to be he may shag hookers, but he's not that bad, really, because he also wants the good things. He just gets there a different way. One of those ways is putting his penis inside of the women. But that aside, he kind of wants the same thing.
It's an unconventional tactic for the FBI, but, you know.
What I will say is, and I think there'll be kind of, even though obviously it's different, a different locale, I think there may be kind of wire comparisons and things like that. What it didn't get into yet, and I'll be interested if anyone's seen any more, if it did, is kind of the institutional framework that underpins a lot of that kind of local law enforcement, especially in the 90s. It didn't really start to dig into any of that for me, so it was quite simplistic in some respects. So I was kind of really mixed on it, and I'm not sure at this point if I'm going to bother with episode two, Boyd.
I watched episode two, and it does get more into that. So I think what the setup, this is very much a classic setup, isn't it? Because you're introduced to these two contrasting characters. The cop, Kevin Bacon's character, who is so racist, like his first sentence is the N-word is in it. And there's a kind of, yeah, he's incredibly racist, sexist, horrible to everyone, corrupt, but in the end, by the end of the first episode, spoiler alert, he kind of gets together with the other main character, as you say, by Aldous Hodge, clearly the good guy who's going to change everything.
Not in a herpes kind of way.
No. But they kind of, yeah, they meet, and from then on, as the series goes on, it's going to be kind of how they work together to change things, even though incredibly unlikely that the racist, horrible man, Kevin Bacon, is kind of, you know, there are good elements to him, is one of the kind of themes of it, and can these two contrasting characters work together? And I think it does get more interesting. Well, certainly from episode two episode one spends an inordinate amount of time setting up the kind of robbery thing going on, which I found a bit tedious. There's a whole robbery thing, with masks and everything. And that was like, I've seen that loads of times before, but the real meat of it, what you really want, because this is based on a true story of how in Boston they really did revolutionize the justice system in the 90s, and it was a huge thing in America, and it was a huge example of how you can actually change things and you can kind of clean up to some extent the crime system. So I think it will be interesting. If you like The Town, I really like The Town. I really like those kind of Ben Affleck.
It's not as good as The Town.
No, it's not as good. But I think it's getting there. I think it's got the potential to get there. But I love the fact that kind of it is, as you say, it is the most Boston thing that's ever been, apart from The Town. And I kind of want to see more of it. So I'm kind of into it.
There's a bit, right, and this isn't a spoiler, it's really early on. Kevin Bacon's been a dick and he's in a bar and he like takes out a little vial of cocaine, snorts a line off a bar just to show like what a badass he is. And the fact that within an episode you're kind of meant to watch him do that, you watch him shag a hooker, you watch him like have to go get tested for an STD, and then he's a dick to his wife and he's a dick to his mother-in-law, and he's like, oh yeah, they're establishing he's a prick. And then really quite quickly it's like, oh no, it's on the turn now, and they've already, and his path to redemption within 35 minutes. There were so many heavy-handed things dropped within the first half of the show, which were all to indicate he's a prick, that I found that kind of irritating.
Yeah, it's not subtle. Yeah, it's completely, it's quite clunky, But I just like the kind
of... You don't mind?
I didn't mind, I like the atmosphere of it. I like the texture of it. Yeah, I love this kind of thing, I think, basically. Like law and order, crime in Boston with lots of people behaving really badly and immorally and yet, in the end, they will do something quite... I kind of like the whole thing, yeah. The milieu, I'm going to use that word.
The what?
I like the milieu of this show.
If you enjoy a good milieu, City on the Hill scare airs on Sky Atlantic.
Hang on. What did you think of it?
It was fun. Oh, yeah.
Did you watch it?
Of course I watched it. I mean, no, I actually did watch it. No, I mean, I liked it. I like Jonathan Tucker, who's in The Black Donnellys and in Kingdom. I thought he was very good in it as kind of the lead armed robber. But I was a bit, not bored, but like so much. I recognised it was good and also recognised there was zero chance of me watching any more episodes.
Zero chance?
Yeah.
Wow.
Just because there's so much good stuff.
Yeah.
But that does air on Now TV and Sky Atlantic on Wednesday, September the 18th at 9 p.m. Also out this week is American Horror Story 1984, which you'd really think we'd want to talk about, except they wouldn't fucking show it to us. Boom! Yeah. So that's a shame.
But to be fair, not just us, no critics have seen it yet in America. I think they do it now with American Horror Story. Did you watch American Horror Story?
I mean, we saw the last one, though.
Did we see it in time?
We read it on the podcast.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
In that case, just ignore everything I'm saying.
Okay, good.
But I'm really excited about it.
Yes, we did.
Does anyone remember this?
Come on.
I don't think we previewed it before it went out. I think we started talking about it once we've seen it, once it went out.
Are you sure?
I think you're wrong, yeah. You think you remember every single thing, but I don't think you do.
I must admit, there are fewer dragons in this, so it might have slipped through my memory.
Yeah, I don't think there are dragons.
All right, fine.
It's set in 1984, though.
Yeah, this is like, it's going to be stalk and slash movies, like Friday the 13th kind of things.
Right.
Yeah. Which I love those. I love that genre of film. So I'm excited by the whole thing.
Amazing. So we'll talk about it next week, is what you're saying.
We'll talk about it next week.
Yeah. But anyway, that is on Fox UK on Thursday, September 19th at 10 p.m.
What channel?
Fox UK.
Yeah, a lot of people say that.
I do this all the time. When Boyd's like, oh, this is the new show on Alibi. And I'm like, you what? So what?
I've had a show on Alibi.
Alibi?
I mean, what I meant
apart from
to
my
say,
show.
Alibi's really big now.
Yeah. Oh, it's huge. Huge. I love all the
Alibis. We were actually the biggest show.
You were the biggest show.
What was on Alibi?
Quantico.
Was Quantico on Alibi?
Quantico on Alibi.
I know Quantico. I do know Quantico, but I don't know Alibi.
You were one of the main stars of a big primetime ABC American mainstream network show, right? For 3 years.
I did two seasons. I came in the second season. Yeah.
Okay. What was that like? As an experience, kind of.
Oh, amazing. Busy.
Hours are terrible.
The American way. The first week we finished on Saturday morning, they call it Fratterdy, and we finished at 9 a.m. Saturday morning. And then you get home and you sleep, and then Sunday you go to the gym, and then Monday you're in at 6 a.m. And then that night you might finish, you're meant to finish at 6, but you finish at say 9 p.m. So the next day you don't start till 9 a.m. And then that night means you don't. And it goes on and on like that for months. And then after probably about episode 4, they stop writing. Harry Doyle walks in with his top off, because you're literally like, when am I supposed to have gone to the gym? You're like, am I an android? Like, you can't maintain any sort of physique when you're working them hours. So you've got 2 or 3 episodes where everyone has their tops off and everyone's like naked. And then after that, we're all like literally in roll necks and scarves, just like living off the food there. It was really, really enjoyable, but it's crazy because they just, and because all, what's fascinating as well, which I've never done before, is you're in a show, you're still filming it when it's on TV. And also the reason why you work long hours is because they don't have any time to pick stuff up. Because when you film stuff now and it gets edited, you'd film it and go, right, well, we can't shoot that car stuff now, so let's pick that up in a couple of months when we've got this break in schedule. They're like, no, this is going out in 2 weeks, so we just got to film it. And it's tough. You got to keep up the pace and just be on it. But oh yeah, it's very enjoyable. But I don't know if I'd rush back into network TVs quite so quick.
The catering must be awesome, though.
Oh, what?
Oh my God.
I visited the set, and
it's
I have to say,
a wedding buffet. They have something called craft service, which is just like these two tables full of food constantly being refreshed. And you say to them, I really fancy some sushi with some brown rice. And they're like, okay. And then it like turns up. And it's insane, this food all day long. And it's a whole department, craft service. They have like a whole union and everything. They're their own thing. It's amazing.
Probably doesn't help with the topless scenes, really.
No, it doesn't. No, because it's all like peanut M&Ms, and you're just like going like one or two, and before you know it, yeah. But no, the food. What did you think of the food then?
It was incredible. I mean, I've visited a set of film. It seemed to be even more lavish than film set food.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was weird. Yeah, there was like half a room.
Yeah,
was the food.
Yeah,
and every type of chocolate and cake.
Yep,
and
yep.
It was extraordinary. Yeah, I don't know how you kept up the fitness level. But you also did Looking, which was a great HBO show.
Yes.
So was that a very different thing? Because that was an HBO. I mean, they must throw a lot of money at their shows as well.
They do, but the thing with Looking is that it felt like a more of a little family together. The ABC is like a massive Disney channel, and we were a massive cast, and it's very stunty, and we're all like somewhere every different day. But Looking was such a beautiful, like, domestic, just about the acting and the relationship. But the network stuff was about the acting, and it was about the writing, but it was mainly about the spectacle of what it was to be like FBI, CIA. Mm. So the Looking thing was a different experience because it was more, as an actor, it was more like about that.
Looking, it was a massive kind of cult phenomenon, wasn't it? People are still going on about it now.
More so now. I mean, right. At the time it got kind of, I absolutely loved it, but there was a whole thing where it came out and people weren't ready for the quiet pace of it. I think it was because it's a half hour comedy, which it wasn't really. It was more a dramedy. With a lot more drama, with funny moments, but they wanted it to be like Will and Grace,
right.
I think.
Oh, God.
And there wasn't like a catchphrase, and there wasn't like this and that. And people, I think a lot of the blogosphere were kind of really down on it to begin with. And then by episode 3, they were like, oh no, we really like it. But by that point, there's sort of some damage had been done, and there was a consensus, especially in San Francisco, like walking around, people are like, oh, I don't want to watch this show, it's boring, I've heard it's boring. And you're like, well, it's about like your town and relationships. And they were like, no, I heard it's boring. So then that became like the thing, you know. And so many times that happens with TV shows. That TV show, people go, no, it's not very good. And you sort of go, you have received wisdom. You go, oh yeah, it's not very good. You don't really take it for yourself to watch it, you know. Like, we've heard your reviews tonight. In the show that you've been down and I might fucking love, but I've heard your review and I'm like, nah, skip
that. So you're saying we've ruined their...
You've ruined everything. Yeah. You're ruining the industry.
Really sorry.
That is an interesting point, because it was like a half hour long show, wasn't
yeah.
it? But the pace of it was, because it was Andrew Hake, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Andrew Hake.
And I think his whole thing is a deliberate pace.
He, totally.
And unlike the show which we reviewed, which I think needed to be faster paced, yes. looking, almost the brilliant thing about it was it immersed you in a yeah. kind of atmosphere.
But I think if that
it?
Show came out now, it would have a different
100%, yeah.
different
it was
response.
Ahead of its time, wasn't
yeah,
it?
It was. Yeah,
and I think Andrew Hake is brilliant. His episodes of The OA, the greatest show ever made, were beautiful,
yeah.
absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
You did have, let me bring it right down to a basic level though, you did have a huge amount of nudity. In looking.
I did,
you?
Yeah.
Even by your standards. I mean, you're naked in practically every show you do.
I am. You still didn't see my willy, but there was an episode 4 in that where I get penetrated, and I said to my mum and dad, well, my dad stopped watching after episode 2, so I love you, son, not for me. I said to my mum, don't watch episode 4 of season 2. She went, why? I said, because I just don't really want you to watch it. She's like, all right, I won't watch it then. And then about 2-3 months later, I said to my mum, I said, did you watch that episode? She went, yes, I saw your little bum going up and down. It's like, God, there's no way back your mum seeing you get fucked up the arse on TV. Like, how do you come back from that? That's my little boy. It's not getting fucked up the arse, he's dead. It's like, what's the choice?
Yeah. Oh. Amazing.
By Jonathan Groff of Mindhunter.
Love.
I mean,
love
he
him.
Is brilliant.
Yes.
Mindhunter is fucking incredible.
Yes, I'm
absolutely.
Obsessed with him.
Yeah, it is brilliant.
And he was brilliant in Hamilton.
Of course.
Yes.
Read the sex scenes thing. Is it an uncomfortable thing to do, though? Is it? Because nowadays, there's rules now, aren't there? They have intimacy.
You get an intimacy coordinator.
Well, we did have to be sat down before you start filming to sit with someone who would talk us through the legalities of
when an
how
actor and another actor love each other very much. That kind of thing.
Yeah, this is what happened. The legalities of it, because that's very big over there, that like about the legal side of that. But no, they do something called closed set. And then you have a little bag of gold, so you put your bits into, like, you know, the Sheriff of Nottingham in Robin Hood. When he that's what your bits look like, in like a little like suedette pouch. And we're both kind of there in our suedette pouches on set. But you have a closed set, so there's not many people there. And if you trust each other and you like each other or anything, it's quite, you know, quite fun, I guess.
But the willy where you draw the line? So to speak.
Metaphorically speaking.
All right. I am yet to get it out on screen.
Even in Being Human, didn't when you in Being Human?
I didn't really see it. I think someone did a screen grab once, and it was a little bit. But I try not to talk about that because it was like -5 in the forest. It wasn't my penis. It's not my penis. That's a stick. But I mean, there'll be a job one day where I'll be like. Full frontal, but it's got to be worth it, because that sort of shit just gets like screen grabbed everywhere, doesn't it? Yeah. That you can't get away from any of that anymore. And the amount of times I get people like direct messaging me images of myself naked, yeah, and it's
and
it's
that's
like,
just boys,
yeah, like,
and my mum.
I'm allowed.
Yeah, your poor mum. Your poor mum.
When you were filming, looking, you took your mum to one of those San Francisco street fairs.
So there's something called Folsom Street Fair, which happens in San Francisco every year. People know we go. So we got some LGBTQI people in the audience, and it's basically a pervert fair. And my mum said, I want to come to San Francisco, but I want to come when the pervert fair's on. And I was like, okay. So my mum's like amazingly open-minded. I'll tell you another story in a minute about messing my friends in the audience. can I tell that story? Yeah, okay. So I took my mum to Folsom Street Fair, and she's there, and she's walking around. I said, oh, look, there's someone having a wank over there, mum. She's like, where? Oh, yeah. I said, oh, that woman's getting whipped. Oh, God. She walked over, she went, does that hurt? The mum's like, yes, ma'am. She's like, okay, can I get a picture? Picture. So some other guy, she went, I want to see someone who's got silicone in their balls. And I went, there you go, mum. She's like, oh, yeah, right, camera out, like that. Anyway, so I put all the pictures up on Facebook with my mum before this stuff. She got reported. That got taken. It all got taken off. It's like, why? I was like, why do you think, mum? So that went. No, my mum's incredibly, incredibly open-minded. I was, am I going to regret telling the story? So my friend who's in the audience was on a date with someone who had quite a big willy, and apparently, and I texted him the next day, and I texted him, I said, hey girl, did you take that monster cock last night?
Kiss.
To my mum.
Uh.
Delete. Ignore that, mum. Don't read that message. Delete. Message comes back. You're lucky I'm open-minded. Kiss.
Imagine.
That's
my mum would have been like, oh my
hey, God. Girl. Did you take that monster cop?
And on that bombshell, I don't know how we follow that, I'll be honest with you.
You can't. Give us another review or something.
Yes, go, okay, nice. Quick. Yeah. All right, no, I think it's time for, let's be honest, the segment that has long been the highlight of this podcast, despite what Terry says. It's Banshee time. Thank you. For the uninitiated among you, so this is the Banshee segment, dubbed so after Jonathan Tropper's show of the same name, in which we pick a show or shows from ages past that you may not have heard of, although that point's occasionally
like Spooks.
Negotiable.
Like Darling Buds of May.
And recommend it for your viewing pleasure. Now, I have a confession to make. It's possible I made a stop on the way here tonight.
Oh. Oh, there we go.
That sci-fi story.
Yep. I made a stop at Charlie Brooker's former place of employment, and it's time for a bumper Banshee bonanza. So, and we're horribly overrunning, so I'm going to try and do this really quickly. Okay, let's see what we've got in here. Okay, right. First of all, we have Andromeda. £5 this cost me. AKA Gene Roddenberry's Andromeda. Anyone seen this? So, okay, this is from the creator of Star Trek. It starred Kevin Sorbo, Hercules, The Legendary Journeys, yeah? As the captain of the Andromeda, which is a ship that gets caught on the event horizon of a black hole and gets stuck in time for 300 years. And then it discovers this whole galaxy when it comes out. There are bat creatures called the Magog. There are ubermenches called the Nietzscheans. And I can't emphasize this enough, there is a girl with a tail sewn to her arse. Like, literally, like a pantomime tale, and they realised it was shit, so we get shot off in the fourth episode. This inexplicably ran for 5 seasons and is unmitigated shit, but one of you will get this a bit later on. That's that, right. Next up, we have, for £1, Roswell. Ooh, a bit of Roswell love in the room. Do you see Roswell? So Roswell, this starred Katherine Heigl, William Sadler was in this, Colin Hanks was in this, Emily DeRavine was in this. And it was about, obviously, the Roswell aliens, except they look a bit like that, and they go to high school. So it was high school melodrama with weird alien shit in it. Now, this ran for, I want to say, 3 seasons, and it got cancelled because, do you remember Smallville? Remember Smallville?
Yep.
Smallville nicked its audience. So it died because of Smallville. And fun
That's
fact.
That's awful.
Yeah. Fun fact.
Tragic.
At the rap party for the show, the final episode, when it got cancelled, some wag put on Save Me by Remy Zero, which was, of course, the Smallville theme tune. Didn't go down well.
Who says wag?
I don't know. I do. Anyway, we're running out of time.
17 Next. Minutes.
Next, this is Lie to Me. Lie to Me. Did you see this?
Yeah, that was good. Yep.
Lie to Me. Now, this was Tim Roth. Love Tim Roth. And he played Cal Lightman, and he's a guy who can essentially tell when people are lying. So it was a procedural, you'd love it. And essentially it was him sitting in front of criminals saying, liar, liar, pants on fire, and them getting caught. And that was the whole thing. It sounds shit, it was actually really, really good. So I very much recommend this. Went for about 3 seasons, got cancelled, I was really gutted. There you go, Terry, you can have that.
Thanks.
Next up, this will end, I promise. Sliders, anyone see Sliders? Remember Sliders? This cost me £6. This was Jonathan Rhys-Davies and Jerry O'Connell and Sabrina Lloyd, and they get sucked into a wormhole, and then every episode, for reasons that don't really matter, they fall out of the wormhole, and there's like an alternate...
But this is like a space wormhole, not like a ground wormhole.
I mean, it could be either.
It's not in a park.
No, it's not in a park. It's like a sandworm from Denis Villeneuve's Dune. No, it's not that. So,
Can I just say, when I was explaining to Russell the format of the show... I literally said these words. I said, there's this bit called Banshee where we each pick like an old show. It takes 2 minutes.
It got cancelled. That's all you need to know. Right, that was fine. Next. Dollhouse? Yes, Dollhouse. This was the show Joss Whedon did after Angel. Oh. And it starred Eliza Dushku as Echo, and she was a doll, and she lived in this sort of house, and they essentially programmed her with a new personality like each week, and she'd become a new person, so it was like a shit quantum leap, and but she started to remember things, and it all got a bit sci-fi, and then they were going to cancel it, but it was Joss Whedon, and they realised that people would kill them, so they let it run for 2 seasons, and then they cancelled it, and it finished, and that cost £8. Anyway, next, My Name is Earl. This starred
a character called... Oh. It was funny, there was a character called Crabman. Next. Okay, Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Did you know this was a thing? Have you ever heard of this?
Yes.
Okay, fine, okay.
We own televisions.
Thank you, Jerry. So this started Lena Headey as Sarah Connor, and it continued after Terminator 2. It ignored Terminator 3, as all things should. And it was what you think. Terminators tried to kill them. Sarah Connor falls in love with a paramedic, and I can't emphasize this enough. John's uncle Derek comes back from the future. This is absolutely true. John's uncle Derek Reese comes back from the future to help him. Cancelled after 2 seasons, can't imagine why. Next, and we're nearly there. This is unforgotten, this is absolutely not a banshee, but it's so good that I wanted someone in the audience to have it, so I bought that too. Last but not least, actual banshee! I went fucking everywhere to find this. £4, this was Jonathan Tropper's show, it starred Anthony Starr as Lucas Hood. He's kind of like an ex-con sort of masquerading as a sheriff, as a police chief. And it's really violent, it's really, really inappropriate, but it's really, really, really schlocky and really good fun. It's the most Cinemax thing ever made, and someone gets to walk away with this as well. And that, quite literally, was my banshee.
Okay.
Jonathan Boyd.
Which show ran from... This show ran from 2006 to 2007. Only 2 series of it. But among the people that appeared in it are David Mitchell, Jonathan Ross, Alistair McGowan, Russell Brand, Joe Brand, Elton John, Omid Jalili, and more. The regular cast included Sharon Horgan and Rob Brydon.
Oh.
Rob Brydon's annually retentive... Which also starred Russell Tovey.
Yeah, I was in that.
And was...
You think you might have got that one.
And was this kind of weird, like, Larry Sanders Show-style attempt to do that kind of genre of comedy where you go behind the scenes of the making of a TV show. And Rob Brydon was hosting a fake panel show called Annually Retentive. And it was all filmed at the BBC, wasn't it? Like, behind the scenes.
That changed my career, that job. I did Gavin and Stacey when we came back from doing the History Boys on Broadway, and then I met Rob Brydon and that, and he said, will you come and do this role in Annually Retentive, which Russell T Davies was watching and said, wrote me the part of Midshipman framing the Christmas Doctor Who with David Tennant and Kylie Minogue, which was the same production company then did Being Human, which then did Him and Her, and then after that it all just sort of changed. Yeah. So because of that, it was...
Yeah,
I should have known that.
And no one remembers that show. Generally,
the people who were in it.
And it was kind of improvised. And I was in it. I was in one scene. Yeah, I played myself. And Rob Brydon was trying
Sharon Horgan was in it as well.
Yeah, and Rob Brydon was trying to get a good review in Heat and wanted 5 stars. And he was literally trying to convince me in a scene to give him 5 stars. Yeah, and you played his producer.
I did.
And it was a kind of quite a good, weird, inventive show. And all those people played guest star roles, mostly playing themselves. Like Elton John pops up at the end of an episode.
Can we talk about you though a bit more?
Yeah.
So, because you also fingered those knickers in Gavin and Stacey.
Yeah.
And so this is your second...
In what?
Gavin and Stacey Christmas special. I'm in the first
He was
scene,
sniffing you know. Knickers in M&S. Yeah.
Not he was touching them, he wasn't
I'm playing
them,
a store employee who's putting the knickers out in the storeroom, yeah.
What else have you been in?
Stuff like The Weakest Link or something, but those are the 2 like fictional
You've been
things
on The Weakest
in.
Link?
I was like a celebrity...
Were you The Weakest Link?
Hang on. Hang on, you were on The fucking Weakest Link as a celebrity.
As journalist, journalist. So like Paul Ross was on, he won. And yeah.
Bastard.
Look around to him. Yeah. I was on
what
that.
Else?
But I'm much more proud of being on Rob Brydon's Annual Retentive.
Yeah.
What else?
I think that's about it, yeah. I mean, you know, some bits
home porn and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, Star Stories. So I was in Star Stories as what's her name's lawyer? You know, Paul McCartney's ex, that woman. That terrible woman.
Oh, yeah.
Linda.
Yeah.
Not
Linda. No.
Heather Mills.
Yes. I played Heather Mills' lawyer in Star Stories. Do you remember Star Stories?
Yeah.
It was Channel 4. It was really funny.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, I was in that. Yeah, that's about it, I think.
Well, sorry to interrupt.
It's not about me.
Sorry. Like, this is
we should have the Q&A. We should have some people. Do you want to ask some questions?
Hang on. We need a winner of Banshee.
How did you do it?
I decide.
She decides.
We just pick someone in the audience?
No, I decide.
No.
Oh, you just...
Yeah.
All right, okay.
Sorry, Russell, that wasn't explained to you, but I decide.
Please decide. Yeah.
There can only be one winner of Banshee, and that is Banshee! James has won!
Can solid choice.
I might watch it.
I was going to give it to someone in the audience.
Okay.
You can't have it.
You've been going on at me to watch this fucking thing for like
a
year.
I'll get you another one. Okay. I'll get you another one. Right, so we got some microphones? Yes, we have some microphones. Does anyone have any questions? Let's be honest, they'll all be for Russell, but that's absolutely fine. Yes, sir, down here.
Hello.
Hi.
What is your favourite use of an entire piece of music or song in a TV episode?
Oh, my God. Wow.
Russell?
Right. Play the time. An entire musical song in a TV episode. So it just doesn't stop. It's just an ongoing... I don't think that's happened. I don't know, like... Fucking...
I'll jump in. I will say Way Down in the Hole in The Wire, specifically the final episode of The Wire where you get the Blind Boys of Alabama, you get that one again. Because obviously, you know, that song, it plays the theme tune to every season, but it changes each time. But that first one was always my favourite one. And they play that. It's beautifully sort of done to that montage in the final episode. And I went to see the Five Blind Boys of Alabama at the Jazz Cafe in Camden. They didn't fucking play that song, and that's literally the only reason I went.
Oh, yeah, Snow Patrol in Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, yes.
That was like, what's this song? That changed their career. Yeah, that was amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It was about 15 years ago, yeah.
They used to do that quite a lot. EI did one to Coldplay's Clocks, I recall, as well. They used to I love a musical montage at the end of an episode, don't they?
It's not the whole song, but almost the whole song of Ordinary World by Duran Duran is in season 2 of the OA in a brilliant scene.
Always on brand.
Yeah.
Fuck no. Can't think of one.
Okay. Yes, at the back there.
James.
Oh, God.
Did you get to go to Galaxy's Edge and how was it?
I have to say it was great because Disney paid for my tickets. Yes, I did get to go and I did enjoy myself and I flew the Millennium Falcon and it was lovely. Yeah, it was fun. Oh, yep.
Oh, hello, Russell.
Hello.
Recently, I read a magazine. Let's talk about you are writing a TV drama show, right? Is there any sneak peek you can share with us tonight?
No. No. Something's in the works. But it's quite exciting. But that's it. Yeah. Thank you, though, for bringing that up.
But you are writing a show.
I am.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. That's exciting.
If you text Russell's mum, she'll probably...
Yeah, she'll tell you everything. Yeah.
Yes, at the very back.
Hi guys, I've got two questions, one for the pilot team and one for Russell. Pilot team, how do you think reviewing TV shows compares to film, and which one do you prefer of the two? And Russell, I need to know how much of what happens in years and years is actually going to happen, because I really need to make plans.
Most of it, I think. Hopefully not the end of episode 4 for myself. But it seems like it's all coming true. Bits and bobs. He's like a prophet, Rusty Davis, isn't he? He's like Nostradamus. Mm. Some of the stuff he's predicted is actually occurring. So it's scary, really. And then about reviews.
It's very easy to sound really, really like my diamond shoes are too tight doing this kind of thing. But like, so when you review a film, they invite you to a beautiful air conditioning screening room and they give you free food and drink and you watch it on the screen and it's beautiful. Sometimes you're the only one in the theatre and it's lovely. And then when you review TV, Netflix don't fucking let you see it. And if someone does let you see it, you have to watch it on this tiny little screen with Boyd's name scrawled across the screen in massive letters. That's really fucking weird with some of the shit that we've seen. I can't begin to tell you. And also, like, there's a lot of it. Like, there is so much shit that you have to watch. I mean, because you guys obviously watch a lot of this stuff as well, because everyone does. Like, it's quite overwhelming, the amount of TV that we all watch. But, I mean, we watch a lot of telly, don't we?
We do. I do think, though, there's an element of dynamism to TV reviewing, which I think is... the fact that often we're reviewing one episode or two episodes, and what you're giving is your immediate response to what you've seen. You're not sitting down often with an entire season with loads of context, being able to really frame it in the way that I think, for example, Empire does with film reviews. With film reviews, you know, you are looking at a complete piece of work and really digging into that and giving kind of one definitive take on that if you've been commissioned to review it. So I think they are slightly different arts, and I think they're slightly different beasts. I think, as I say, there's a kind of... It enables you to be a little bit more nimble with TV, and I think it can evolve. I think you can have one opinion after seeing two episodes, and actually you can kind of refine and reconsider that opinion. I think with film, it's slightly different.
Would you put another review out then if you did reconsider your opinion?
Well, it's hard, isn't it? It's hard to do that. But I think TV is much harder, because I think, you know you've got the film and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, you may change your mind over time, but with TV, like we had recently with me, Fosse Verdon, which we reviewed, and I slagged it off.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen it.
Not yet.
And then everyone was going, actually, it gets better and better. And then episode 4 or 5, when they all go away together in the Hamptons, it's fucking brilliant. And I did feel like I had to recant everything I said about it when
did you?
Just saw... Well, I'm like, doing it now.
Okay.
Yeah. That means no.
Yeah.
Do you get annoyed that there's so much content? You're just like frustrated by
it. It's annoying that you can't watch the whole of every series you have to review in a way.
Yeah.
And I think what you're saying about looking is so true, because I think people jump to go see one episode.
Yeah.
They don't know what necessarily how it's supposed to be from that one episode. And if you see like 4 or 5 of the whole
thing. I get box set guilt, and people are like, you've got to stick with this because the end of season 3 it really gets better. And I'm like, I haven't got 109 hours just to like work through something and stick with it.
But it makes you feel really bad. Like we'll slag off sort of like a TV show because we didn't like the pilot. But pilots are often finding their own feet, and they sometimes are just a bit bad.
Yeah.
You know, they're not as good as they could be, and maybe it's the best show ever. I mean, genuinely, I watched the pilot of The West Wing and I didn't necessarily like it. We'll never speak of this again. This is my favourite show of all time. Yeah. So, you know,
but I think it is part, we talk about this on the podcast a lot, it's part of the problem with TV is people, and it's kind of what you were saying earlier, people watch one or two episodes, go, this is shite, tell everybody they know that it's shite, and then it kind of stops people. When you think, I think, God, 5, 10 years ago, probably more like 10 years ago, you would allow a show to unfurl and give it time.
Well, word of mouth wouldn't have spread as quick now because of social media. Someone goes, it's shit, and everyone hashtags it and retweets it, and then that's it.
Yeah.
You're fucked. Mm-hmm. Whereas back in the day, no, you wouldn't have been able to do that.
Which, what about, you know, slow burn shows that used to kind of dig in and it would really take watching the entire thing to kind of just really understand how fucking amazing it is.
Yeah.
Now it's like, you better fucking kill it in episode one or nobody's going to watch. Like, and it may lead to amazing stuff like The Bodyguard. We talked a lot about the first 40 minutes of Bodyguard being incredible.
Yeah.
But that pressure, I think, on filmmakers and showrunners and actors to kind of land a kind of dynamism and excitement and drama and action and everything in that first episode, or people are not going to give it time, I think it must be really challenging in a lot of circumstances.
If only there was some kind of feature in Pilot TV magazine called, Give It Time, where we tell people to stick with shows.
Yeah.
Oh, I did put Fosse Verdon in that, actually. There you go. Then. That's what I did.
There you go. Yeah. He's made amends. Yep. We've got time for a few more. You Then You. I'm just making you run, really. Keeping you on your toes.
Congratulations, Terry, on your book.
Thank you.
When it eventually gets to be a TV show, who do you want to play you?
For anyone who doesn't know, Terry has written a book. It is about Picard. It's an in-depth exploration of the themes of the show.
It's a memoir, and somebody suggested James do the audiobook.
Yes!
On Twitter.
I think you'll find what Terry meant when she read this paragraph was...
I mean, him James-splaining my life so far just feels so fitting. Who would play me? Oh, God, Kathy Burke. Like, on any film, any show, any existence, I will be Kathy Burke.
Daisy from Downton would be young Terry.
I mean, she is like me, essentially. Yeah.
That'd be amazing. Yes, then.
Hi. Sorry, you've essentially stole my question there, actually, inadvertently. I was going to ask if any of you could play any character in TV, which would you pick and why?
Ooh.
Buffy. But, I mean, just everything. The strength, the vulnerability, the drama, the hair, the outfits. Buffy. James, Buffy.
Yes, it is Buffy. I would like to say President Bartlett from The West Wing, but I think we can all agree it's probably Alan Partridge. Comedy gold!
I would be Ted Danson in Cheers.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I'd like to play that role.
I honestly thought you were going to say Ted Bundy then. And I was like,
no, that's just in normal
life.
That's
a bold choice.
Yeah, that's a life choice.
I mean, I am George Costanza in Seinfeld, so.
Yeah. Yes, you are.
I'm fine with that.
That sounds fair. Yeah. Right, we've probably got about two more. Does anyone want to grab? Yes, someone over there.
It's a question for Russell. Just wondering if there's any chance of any more him and her.
Hmm. Oh, I'd love to. Do you watch Mum? Did you
ever
watch Mum?
Great.
So many people who come up to me and say, I love him and her. So have you watched Mum? And they're like, no, what's that? And I'm like, it's the same writer, the same producers, everything. I'd love to. Absolutely, I'd love to. I'd love to see where Becky and Steve are now at and with the baby and all that sort of stuff and what's going on with Laura and Paul and all that. But I don't know if Stefan Goloszewski wants to do that anymore. I think he's done that, he's done Mum, and now he's on to whatever he's on to next. So, but I would love to, absolutely.
Just have time probably for one more. The nerdy gentleman down there in the front row, I believe, has his hand up.
Yeah, hi.
What have you done?
Can we talk about Blue Bloods?
Love it. The granddad is amazing.
City on a Hill is kind of like Blue Bloods, but good.
It is, yeah.
What the fuck did you just say to me?
I mean, pretty much.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we should talk about Blue Bloods. About an hour? An hour's worth of talk about Blue Bloods? Is that okay?
Yeah, that'll be a special we'll do. Yeah.
Okay.
So, not now, but...
Not now? Yeah, okay. I can come up and talk about Blue Bloods. Also, Gorilla Grodd is in Legends of Tomorrow and tries to kill Barack Obama.
There is a gorilla. I was not wrong.
Yeah. How can you diss Kevin Bacon on this day of all days? It's Friday the 13th. This is the 39th anniversary of his tragic death at the hands of Pamela Voorhees, you monsters. And Jimbo, how can you sit there and talk about Gillian Anderson playing Margaret Thatcher and not do Thatcher, Thatcher, man, milk snatcher? What is wrong with you? Anyway, thank you. That's all I had to say.
Thank you, Chris Hewitt.
Can we, before we finish, can we mention Russell's incredible podcast, Talk Art Podcast?
Oh, yeah, thank you, yes.
Yes. Where he has genuinely amazing guests. Lena Dunham was on, for example.
Oh, really?
Yes. For like 90 minutes. Yeah.
That wasn't like, oh my God, she's great, I otherwise wouldn't have listened to it. That's not what I was saying at all. I was just like, Lena Dunham.
Yeah. And many other incredible people, mostly actual artists, generally.
Yes.
But it is brilliant. I've learned a huge amount every week by listening to it.
Thank you, Boyd.
It's amazing.
Awesome, man. When does that drop? What day does it
tend to? It drops on Fridays.
Fridays?
Yes. Oh. Talk Art, all one word.
Yeah. Same day as the Empire podcast. Listen to that one instead. And that is it for our very special live episode of the Pilot TV podcast. Thanks once again for giving up your Friday night to be here with us, but please can we give a big round of applause to our special panelist who also gave up his Friday night, Russell Tovey.
Thank you.
Thank you to the King's Place for providing this space tonight, and to the one and only Billy Lund who composed our glorious theme tune. If you've enjoyed the show, please head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. If you'd like to tell us how much you loved it in person, you can find us on the Twitters and Instagram at James C. Dyer, at Terry_White, at Boyd Hilton, and at Russell Tovey. We will be back next week, albeit not in person. Until then, pilot out.